This is an iHeart podcast.
There's a lesson in all this wildfire insanity for all of us. We'll talk about that. We'll make fun of Christopher Wray. The coach, Senator Tommy Tuberville, joins us. Man, we are stacked tonight on I'm Right. I had a little light come on in my car this morning. Light came on and it said that my car needs coolant. Now, that this will come to California here in a moment. You'll have to pardon the pun. I know they need a lot of coolant, but light came on in my car. Car said needed some coolant. It's no problem. I'm just going to stop by the shop on the way home, grab some, put it in there. But I want you to pretend like I didn't know how to do that. And then I went to my doctor's office, family doctor. Hey, doc, let me in. I need some help. Doc opens up the door and says, okay, Jesse, what's going on? What's wrong? Hey, doc. I got some car trouble. I need you to come fix it. Well, that wouldn't make any sense, would it? It's not his area of expertise. It's not even an area of interest for him. He knows a lot about the human body and nutrition and your heart and things like that, but I wouldn't go to the doctor and expect him to have any level of knowledge about fixing the problems in my vehicle. So where am I going with this? Why even bring this up? Well, I had a conversation over the weekend with a lady, her family, her husband, her kids. They had been run out of L.A. because of these L.A. wildfires. And she was a friend of a friend's. We were all sitting around talking. And she exclaimed to me, she was so confused that it just came out so loud. Why aren't any of these politicians helping? She's talking about the California politicians. She's not a super partisan human being. Not really right, not really left. Why isn't Gavin Newsom helping? Why isn't Karen Bass helping? Why aren't these people helping? And very similar to me going to my doctor to fix my car troubles, I had to explain to her, you should have seen the look on her face, I had to explain to her that we have a completely different outlook on what our politicians should be doing, different than what they think they should be doing. You see, you, me, when I elect somebody, wherever they are, whether it's on the school board, if I elect someone to the school board, I expect them to dig in, to feel a duty, and dig into the kids and the school and the curriculum and get everything laid out. When I elect somebody as mayor of wherever it may be, I expect them to have a sense of obligation, a sense of duty towards whatever town or city they're a mayor in, and they're going to go to work and they're going to put in the work to be a mayor and do those things. A governor, same thing for his state. He's going to show up every single day. He's going to lay awake at night and he's going to stress about what's going on in his state. He's got to fix his state. That's what you want politicians to do. That's what I want politicians to do. But what we have right now in California is just the latest example is an extreme case of what happens when there's only one party rule, so there's never any performance competition for places like California when it comes to Democrats. If you are a Democrat, at whatever level you're running for office in California, you never, ever, 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 except for the red counties, you never have to worry about competing with Republicans in this way. Meaning you don't have to get up and, hey, I want to be mayor of L.A. and my Republican mayor wants to be mayor of L.A. and, boy, he's got some bad ideas for the city. I've got good ideas for the city. Here's all the ways I'll help the city prosper and be safe. But my Republican, and the Republican will, he'll have his own views. No. This is how we're going to prosper and be safe. But you don't ever have to concern yourself with these things in a place of one-party rule. And so what happens? Well, if I'm a Democrat, and I don't ever have to concern myself with the Republican that may be running, well, I now just have to figure out how to win my primary against the Democrat. And in this day and age, the year of our Lord 2025, what's the best way to really stand out if you're in a primary field full of Democrats? We have to prove how communist you are. Oftentimes, you need to check the cultural Marxist boxes. Is he gay enough? Is it a woman? Is it but really, what it comes down to is, who's the craziest? That's how you stand out in Democrat primaries. No. You want to tax the rich? I want to murder the rich. Oh, yeah, go vote for that guy. That's how you stand out. Well, what you get when you vote that way enough times is you get people in positions of power that L.A.? I mean, Karen Bass of L.A., the concept of L.A., making L.A. better, that's not why that person's there. That's not why that person ran for office to begin with. That person ran for office to do what communists always do. Of course, promote the revolution, but reward her friends and punish her enemies. Those are, as we've discussed many times, the only two things a communist does with power, and they're the only two things he's interested in. As I explained my friend from L.A., as I explained to my friend from L.A., you're sitting there stressed about why isn't Gavin Newsom helping? Why isn't anyone stepping up? Where is Karen Bass? How is this guy not jumping in? And how's this guy jumping in? And you know what I said to her verbatim? I said, you might as well be asking why the Lucchese crime family in New York is not redoing the parking garage at JFK Airport. Completely different missions in life. Karen Bass just came out after all these cuts to the fire department. Of course, she's handing out a bunch of big fat contracts to who? Allies in the city. She's not there to put out fires, solve problems, or help LA. She's there to take taxpayer money and hand it out. And she's there to find her enemies and throw them in prison. Gavin Newsom doing the exact same thing right now. Why isn't Gavin Newsom doing more? Gavin Newsom wants to run for president in 2028. Cross my heart, hope to die. Gavin Newsom has not gone to sleep one night or woken up one morning with a genuine feeling of concern for anybody burning alive in Los Angeles. Those kinds of thoughts don't enter the minds of these people. They simply don't enter their minds. It never occurs to them at all. These people are only there for the next job or the current job. How do I grab more money and power? Give it to me, give it to my friends. How do I find more government ways to punish my political enemies? This is how the communist thinks. Gavin Newsom thinks about 2028, where he can potentially vault to the next job, president of the United States of America. You're wondering why he doesn't step up. If you could hook him up to a lie detector test and ask Gavin Newsom to his face why he isn't stepping up and helping the people of L.A., the results would horrify you. The people of L.A.? That thought never occurred to him. Help the people of L.A. That's not how these people think. It becomes, I believe it was Aaron McIntyre, I want to make sure I give him credit for this, the purity death spiral of wherever the communists take over, you see? Whatever position you're in, you want to run for school board, you're trying to compete against other Democrats on the school board, how do you stand out? How do you get elected, be more communist than the guy who's currently there? You're Karen Bass, you're running for mayor of LA, you're running against this Caruso character. Yeah, he's a business guy, he's got business interests, but you can just tell people, look how black and lesbian I am, you gotta vote for me. Gavin Newsom, same thing, on and on and on it goes. And if this goes on for long enough, you'll eventually have the second biggest city in the United States of America on fire. And not only is nobody putting it out, no one's even interested in it. They are interested, though, in the revolution, you see. For the communists, it is, as Mao said, revolution without end. It can never end. Every single thing. When once human beings are just cogs in the wheel, once you don't care anymore, once you're a communist, once you're an anti-human, once those things come, then everything is really just an opportunity to push forward the revolution.
These types of catastrophic risks, these fire risks, they are increasing. You know, we're seeing the change coming from climate change, and we're seeing more significant severe weather events. That's what we're seeing here in California.
This idea that this is just the new world we're living in due to the climate crisis, extreme heats, prolonged droughts, hurricane force Santa Ana winds, all of that created the tinderbox fueling this catastrophe. Does the scale of devastation in Los Angeles indicate that we as a country are just simply not prepared for the realities of the climate crisis?
No matter what, it all comes back to the revolution. Joining me now, my friend John Phillips, host of The John Phillips Show. He's joining us from Palm Springs, California. John, It really doesn't matter what happens. Hurricane, arson, looting, it doesn't matter. It all has to come right back to politics for these people. They don't see death. They don't care about it. It means nothing to them.
Let's just go ahead and take their argument at face value for a second, because it still makes no sense. Their argument is that climate change is so severe now that cities and states, with the normal response that they would give to something like this, just can't keep up with it. Okay, fine. If climate change is that big of a deal, then wouldn't that be the place where you're spending all of your time? Wouldn't you recognize that the fire risk is now greater than it was before? The flooding risk is greater than it was before? And put your time, your energy, your resources into that because you know it's coming, instead of, gallivanting across the globe, going to inaugurations in Ghana, or traveling around the country campaigning on behalf of Grampy Joe and Kamala Harris after that. If they actually believed what they're saying now, they would stay in California and they would be working on trying to mitigate all of these potential dangers, but they're not. And here's the other thing. Could you blame climate change on erroneous text messages that were sent to everyone repeatedly in the county, telling them to evacuate, even if they weren't in an evacuation zone? Is it climate change responsible for them taking a reservoir offline so that there was no water to fight the fire in Pacific Palisades? Was it climate change that cut the budget of the fire department and then lied about it? If these people were serious, they would be acting in very different ways than they are now. They're bad at their job, they're absentee landlords, and they just got caught with the worst case scenario. This is the consequence of bad government that we have to live with in California.
John, I tried to explain to people a couple minutes ago that they are serious, they're just not serious about anything that the people care about. You know, the people think that they're out there trying to stop fires or help LA or California, but these people are so sick and they've lived in a place with one party rule for so long that California or LA or protecting people, these are honestly, they're childlike concepts for them. They don't, California never occurs to these people.
Well, and they're also bitter. Don't forget, Gavin Newsom thought that this cycle he would be the Democratic nominee for president, and he would be the president-elect at this point, getting ready to start his term as president. And then Grampy Joe screwed him over by endorsing Kamala Harris in the tweet, and now he's just a lame duck governor. Karen Bass was on Grampy Joe's short list to be vice president. It wasn't until Kamala Harris's political people kneecapped her with all of those negative stories about her praise for Castro and all of her history that knocked her out of the running. She thinks, I'm sure, that she should have been the Democratic nominee for president. She should have been Grampy Joe's vice president. So they feel like they're being punished by having to deal with state and local issues that they were elected to deal with. And they don't have any thoughts on these things. They see this as just them being on some kind of detention or home confinement. They see themselves as heads of state, of leaders of the free world. And why are you bothering them with these parochial problems?
Golly, man, that's so on the nose right there. All right, John, for those of us who aren't there, and that's most of us, I realize California's a big state, but I realize social media gives us all kinds of video and pictures, and you're going to get the same pictures of wildfires in the hills, but that doesn't give you an on-the-ground really a feel for the amount of devastation. How bad is it?
It's really bad. If you've seen any of the aerial photographs from anyone flying into one of the commercial airports, Burbank or LAX, you can really see it from the sky, especially at night. But you're talking about thousands and thousands of people who are being displaced, because we've had to deal with fires that are larger than this in California before. What's different about this fire is that it hit a population center. So you're talking about the largest fire in the history of Los Angeles County. LA County is the largest county in the country. And you're talking about the costliest fire in United States history. When you factor that into an insurance crisis that we've already been dealing with, where it's very difficult for California homeowners to purchase insurance policies, and now all of a sudden you have this, we could end up with a situation where insurance companies don't make it out solvent. You could see the state plan, the plan of last resort, the FAIR plan, which Gavin Newsom is in theory supposed to be running. That plan will likely go bankrupt because of this fire. People are going to see in California their home insurance premiums spike right now to pay for this mess. And my guess is you'll probably see rates nationwide jump too, because these companies are going to have to make it up somewhere.
God have mercy. And that brings me finally to what a lot of people are not thinking about right now, the rebuild. When, God forbid, the fires are all gone, the smoke is blown away, the dead bodies are piled up, the people who are going to be in charge of rebuilding LA are some of the most despicable communists in our society. I can't imagine that process is going to go well.
They want us all living in mixed-use housing above a Panda Express. They want us riding their murder trains. They don't want you having a car. They don't want you having a pool. They don't want you having a single-family home. They want you living in a high-density neighborhood. Now, Newsom is claiming that he's not going to do that with Pacific Palisades, but just go on social media and look at what the left is calling on him to do. They want him to rezone these areas. They want high-density housing to go back to these neighborhoods. And I'll tell you, there's a template where this has happened before, and it's Lahaina in Maui. That's what happened to those people, where that beautiful island was devastated by a fire. And then you had these speculators, you had these developers that swooped in, and they're happy to take that land off their hands, and they're happy to put high-density housing that will make them a lot of money. And I've had homeowners whose homes burned down call into my radio show, and they're worried that that's going to happen in their neighborhoods too, and I think they have reason to worry.
Mm-hmm. Pods for everybody. John, thank you, my friend, as always.
Thank you.
All right. Kind of thing can make it hard for you to go to sleep at night, right? Well, it's hard for you. It's not hard for me. I have dream powder from Beam. I have no problem sleeping at night, no matter what's going on in the world, the wildfires, the politics, the insanity. Dream powder is natural. There are all kinds of little pills and things you can take, prescription, over-the-counter, that'll put you to sleep for sure. And every single one of them I've ever taken in my life has you feeling like garbage the next day when you wake up. One thing I've ever taken had me waking up feeling good. That was dream powder from B. Want some of that? It's just a cup of hot chocolate, melatonin. You'll sleep like a baby and wake up feeling great every day. Go to shopbeam.com/JesseKelly for up to 40% off. We'll be back. Joe Biden's almost done. We are 1 week away from our long national nightmare being over. So before we go talk to Lee Smith and get the skinny on Cash Patel, the deep state, Lee Smith has some concerns about some people coming into the upcoming Trump administration. Before we do that, let's walk down memory lane, shall we?
Making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
The beer brewed here, it is used to make the brew beer during this final. Oh, Earth Rider, thanks for the Great Lake.
And I had a nurse named Pearl Nelson, military. She'd come in and do things that I don't think you learn in medical school, nursing school. She'd whisper in my ear. I couldn't understand her. She'd whisper, she'd lean down. He'd actually breathe on me to make sure that there was a connection, a human connection.
Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie?
And the percentage of the men who do so, end of quote. Repeat the line.
Biden's being Biden's being an extremist.
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was in the foothills of the Himalayas with Xi Jinping.
Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Four more years.
I'm gonna miss it. And he's not done. He rolled out this little one a couple days ago.
Mr. President, do you regret your decision to run for re-election? Do you think that that made it easier for your predecessor to now become your successor?
I don't think so. I think I would have beaten Trump, could have beaten Trump, and I think that Kamala could have beaten Trump, would have beaten Trump. It wasn't about... I thought it was important to unify the party. And when the party was worried about whether or not I was going to be able to move, I thought it was, even though I thought I could win again, I thought it was better to unify the party.
Kamala could have beaten Trump? Anyway, I'm going to miss him. Whatever, we'll talk to Lee Smith about some deep state concerns he has next. Before we do that, I'm concerned that you still have Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile. That's my concern. My concern is you're paying every month way too much. You're paying way too much for your cell phone service. And not only that, you're paying one of these garbage companies who hate your freaking guts. The companies who have dedicated themselves to working against us for years now. We fund these operations. I've done it myself. But we don't have to do that anymore when it comes to our cell phone. You can switch to Pure Talk. It's easy. Pure Talk actually loves the country. Pure Talk cut my bill in half. Their CEO fought in Vietnam. This is my kind of cell phone company. New phone or keep your phone, new number or keep your number. They make it easy. Pure Talk makes it easy. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Trump wrote, "The FBI illegally raided my home without cause," and said that Ray had done everything to interfere with the success and future of America.
He's saying that Christopher Ray is corrupt, out to sabotage the country.
Listen, I'm accustomed to people expressing all sorts of opinions about me, just like about everything else. I can tell you that I have been my whole life, my whole adult life, a conservative Republican. More importantly, a strict, by-the-book law enforcement professional. I do take very seriously attacks against our people in the FBI.
Yeah, he takes that very seriously. And you keep it up, he'll send one to your front door. Joining me now, Lee Smith, columnist at Tablet Magazine, author of the book Disappearing the President. Lee, I don't know what you're stressed about, you know, Christopher Ray arresting school board moms for, and, you know, sending the counterterrorism division after us. He's a conservative Republican.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is also, remember what they said about James Comey and Robert Mueller, too. And I mean, this is, Jesse, as you well know, this is a familiar tactic in Washington, D.C., where people disguise themselves as conservatives, Republicans, to get jobs, to get jobs as Democrats, where they can target Republicans, you know, where they can make friends with Democrats and then agree to target Republicans. Again, remember how this happened with Robert Mueller, right? It was Comey and other friends, Republicans, who went after Scooter Libby. Well, this is the same exact thing that happened with the Trump administration. Republican Christopher Ray, friends with Republican Governor Chris Christie, targeted the Trump administration. So that's, you know, it's more insider DC linguistic garbage.
Speaking of the Trump administration, you have a wonderful piece out in Tablet called The Deep State Strikes Back, talking about the attempts, or I guess successes, of the deep state already infiltrating the next Trump administration. What's going on? What should we be looking at? What's happening, Lee?
Well, I'm concerned that that maybe different Trump officials have not learned significant lessons that I think all of us who supported Donald Trump or not, all of us Americans, would like to think that this Trump administration has learned going in that there will be efforts to undermine them. And look, even if it's not just as overt as Christopher Wray and the FBI spying on the Trump campaign, spying on the Trump transition team, and then spying on the president himself, right? And this was James Comey as well as Christopher Wray, that there's going to be efforts to turn Trump administration policy to suit the interest of DC insiders. And so that's really what that piece is about, that there are problems with the figure that the NSC staff, Trump's NSC staff, is looking at to be senior director for intelligence, which is really a key post, and because that's the president's liaison with all 18 of the intelligence services across the board. This person is extremely important. This person knows all the covert operations. This person is also responsible for making sure the presidential daily brief gets to all the people across the cabinet, and is in contact with the White House about all sorts of crucial intelligence matters. And if you don't have the right person handling that job, if you have someone who's going to try to who has their own ideas about how the world should work, then that in itself is a problem, never mind the fact that they might try to undermine them. And I will say that position last time, the people they had in place in 2017 were very good, because these were the people who discovered, these were the people, the NSC staff, who first discovered that the Obama officials had been spying on the Trump transition team. Most famously, 40 Obama officials had unmasked the name of General Michael Flynn from transcripts of foreign intelligence intercepts. And that's the NSC staff, the first time, who found that out. So there were some also very excellent people on that NSC staff in 2016, 2017, and throughout the entirety of the first Trump administration, and also lots of problems. So what people want now, what we expect now, is that President Trump, President-elect Trump, until next week, has a very ambitious agenda, and everyone has to be on board, and everyone has to be ready to hit the ground running, because at tops, there's less than 4 years for the president to implement his agenda, and there will be even less if Congress is taken over by the Democrats in the 2026 election. So it's very important everyone gets off on the right foot.
Why aren't we getting off on the right foot then, Lee? Because in a lot of ways, I see a lot of these appointments as, wow, Trump really gets it, that he needs reformers in there now, yeah, even if they're people that aren't perfect. He's clearly a man that's more bent on reform this time, more bent on doing it a different way. So why the stumbles where there are stumbles?
I'll give a psychological explanation first. How is that? And that is, the country has, Jesse, you and I have been talking about this for years, the country has really suffered a very serious psychological blow. What happened during the Biden years, right? I mean, everything from Joe Biden standing up and accusing half of the country of being domestic terrorists, to what we were talking about before, Christopher Wray's FBI going after school parents, going after pro-life activists, going after every January 6th defendant as though they were a member of Hamas. So this is forcing vaccines on people. So this has taken a real toll on people. And after Donald Trump won 2 months ago, I think that people were right to breathe a sigh of relief. Finally, things are going to return back to normal. But I don't think that people are prepared for the fight ahead. I think that people have relaxed too much, and they believe that right now that the left, the psychopaths on the left, the pathological the pathological liars and the lunatics on the left are now going to lay down and go, well, after all, Trump won in a fair election. They won the popular vote too, in fact. So I guess we have to, you know, we'll be the loyal opposition, but we're not going to go crazy the way we have for the last 8 years. So I think that lots of people heading into that administration are assuming that we're looking at a normal 4 years ahead, and we're not going to be looking at a normal 4 years ahead, because we're still dealing with the very same damaged, deranged people in the media, in the a large number of people in the intelligence services, and just different political operatives on the left. So I think that's one reason people have let their guard down, frankly. They're not prepared, Lee, yet, what are we... for what's going to happen.
What are we thinking about Cash Patel? Not that I need your endorsement of him. I already know your thoughts and my thoughts as well. I'm excited. It's going to be good. But what can he do? I mean, I've talked to people when it comes to CIA head that have told me, and they're just going to keep everything from the director. They're just not going to show him anything. Yeah. What do we think he can accomplish?
Well, I think that that Cash Patel believes that look, it's very interesting, the Christopher Wray thing. I reported this and you know, my first book about these operations against Donald Trump, plot against the president. You know, Devin Nunes I asked Christopher Wray to have some of his guys come over, and Cash was one of them, to show them the details of the Nunes memo. So Cash is very it's very important. While you know, Cash is very lively, very vivid, exciting character, Cash is also a real a professional too, and he knows how to follow procedure. He knows how to get different people on board. And look, there's lots of people, Jesse, I'm sure you've spoken with them too, FBI agents who are still in the Bureau, or people who have retired from the Bureau, who say Cash is the best guy. He's going to have lots of people on side who want to reform that institution, who want to fix it and make it serve the American people once again. It's designed to serve and protect the American people. And I think that Cash is going to have a number of people who are going to link arms with him, and we're going to do it. Look, it's really exciting, actually. For the first time in my lifetime, Jesse, I'm sure you grew up in the same way. TV shows, movies about the FBI, Elliot Ness, The Untouchables. Wow, what an amazing crime-fighting institution this is. As a little kid, you go into your local FBI field office, you go down to Washington, you get an FBI T-shirt, and you just think the FBI is one of the greatest places ever. And what have we seen the last few decades? It's terrible. They're turning against Americans. And then you see people, how they respond to Cash, like he's a real life superhero. So it's great for the country. It's great for the FBI. And I think it's going to turn a new page on a very, very important institution.
I agree. All right. Finally, Joe Biden, of course, whenever he can get functional, gets up there and gives speeches now. He gave a big foreign policy speech. What kind of foreign policy changes, legitimate ones, can we expect when Trump gets there?
Well, I think a very important thing to keep in mind, what Donald Trump means by America first is not that America will merely withdraw into itself and we'll figure out how to fix its problems. That's one of the things that we have to do. And that's one of the things, it's one of the reasons, that is the reason why Cash Patel is at the FBI, to fix that. So there's lots of things that need to be fixed. But America first also means that America number one, right? This is what it means. And so when Donald Trump is talking about things like, how do we get Greenland? We may have to take the Panama Canal back because the Panamanians are being very bad, letting in all these different People's Liberation Army troops run the Panama Canal. So this is all a part of Trump's foreign policy. It's not just military strength. He talks about rebuilding the Navy. He talks about, you know, his defense secretary designate, his nominee, Pete Hegseth. Oh, he's going to return it to to a real fighting organization once again, move away from DEI garbage. But it's not just America's military might, it's also America's economic might and diplomatic might. So that's how I see Donald Trump's foreign policy, that America once again, the indispensable country. Now, we know Donald Trump is not going to go off looking for foreign adventures, looking for wars, looking for trouble, but it's important to keep in mind what makes Donald Trump a great foreign policy president is not simply the fact that he didn't engage in any new conflicts, right? It's by exercising American might through all those different means, military, economic, political, diplomatic, that we should be able to ensure American peace and American prosperity. And that's the point, the purpose of Donald Trump's foreign policy. So I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be a great and important time to right a whole bunch of things that have just that have just gone crazy. I mean, just to take one short example, if you look at the Red Sea, have this Iranian-backed terror group, the Houthi rebels, effectively pirates, right? And they've affected Red Sea shipping. This is bad for Americans. It's bad for the American middle class. This anything that interferes with shipping across the world is bad for America. And it's bad for our markets, it's bad for energy prices, it's bad for what we sell and what we buy. And so just the fact that Donald Trump, again, is going to exercise American power on behalf of Americans is not just an improvement over Joe Biden, it's a 180 turn from what the Biden administration has been doing the last 4 years.
Sign me up for that. Lee, thank you, my friend, as always. Pete Hegseth says confirmation hearing is tomorrow. The coach, Tommy Tuberville, joins us to talk about it next. Well, the confirmation hearings begin tomorrow with one of the ones I'm most excited about. Pete Hegseth is, I hope, going to get right through, but guys like me have to hope. Guys like the coach actually get to vote for it. So let's find out what the skinny is from Capitol Hill. Joining me now, the coach, Tommy Tuberville, senator from the great state of Alabama. Okay, coach, you have not exactly been shy about your support for Pete Hegseth. Is that support falling on deaf ears? Do you think we're on a gravy train with biscuit wheels here?
Well, I was a little concerned at first, Jesse, to be honest with you. And all we need is Republicans to vote. The Democrats, the far left, woke DEI groups, not going to vote for Pete. He might get one. But at the end of the day, it's going to take Republicans. We got to step up and make sure that President Trump gets his staff together. He picked them. He vetted them. If that's who he wants, that's who I want for him. But I've known Pete for a while. And Pete's tomorrow. I spoke this morning with a group of Navy SEALs that are going to march in the morning up to the Capitol on his behalf. He's got tremendous support, and he's got the leadership skills. He knows the military. We don't need a general from the Pentagon. What we need is a drill sergeant, somebody that's going to bring our military back to discipline and sacrifice and all the things that build a great military, because right now, Obama started this DEI critical race theory, and we've been suffering ever since.
We most certainly have, and I hear it from every veteran friend of mine, every guy I serve with. They tell me they're not telling their kids to join. In fact, they're telling their kids not to join. So if we have 20 years of GWAT veterans telling the most patriotic children to go do something else, the problems Pete Hegseth have to tackle are enormous, aren't they?
Yeah. We have an all-volunteer military, and over half of that military comes from parents that were in the military. And as you just said, these parents now that have left or are leaving, their military position are telling their kids, "No way, Jose, you're not getting involved in this mess." And so I had one kid that. His lifelong dream was to go to the military academy. And we get to appoint several each year or nominate. And I had one that was nominated and appointed. And he, after looking through the situation, said there's no way he's going to get involved in this woke agenda that they're pushing. And we need the best and brightest men and women in this country being an all-volunteer army. And right now we're in a tailspin. And our recruiting is way down. The attitude, the morale is just awful. And we live in the most dangerous time ever. So it's a scary situation. And we need a leader like Pete Hegseth at the top.
Coach, can you explain the difference in mentalities on Capitol Hill? Meaning every time Democrat Joe Biden gets into office, it's just really baked into the cake. It's expected that every Democrat will vote for them, but most of the Republicans will do so as well. Well, he gets his guys, and yet that's not ever reciprocated. So why do Republicans continue to vote for the thing the Democrat wants when it's not reciprocated? Why?
Well, because we got people that say they're Republicans and they're not. At the end of the day, Jesse, to make matters pretty simple, I gave a speech on the floor before Christmas. And we did the research, and Not one Democrat voted against any of Joe Biden's nominees. Not one. Every one of them. And so they were confirmed. They didn't have to have Republicans, although we did have a lot of Republicans that voted for some of theirs. And, I'm in the belief that, hey, if this is what the president wants, as long as they're, we vet them thoroughly, that's who they should get. When I coached, I didn't want somebody telling me what offensive coordinator hire or what offensive line coach. You want to go in there and understand the people are going to be behind you 100% with loyalty, and you can get this built. And what happened to President Trump on his first go around was the deep state pushed a lot of people on him that absolutely were not Donald Trump type of people, nor American people that believed in the future of this country like we do.
Tell me about this men and women's sports bill. I can't believe that's necessary to have a bill like that. That really kind of speaks to how sad of a place we're at. But what is this bill?
Well, the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. And Jesse, this is third time around. I've had two votes on it, and neither one of them got the votes. Every Democrat, except for Joe Manchin, voted against me. First time around, I actually had a couple Republicans that voted against me. And all this basically says is no biological males in women's sports. No dressing rooms, no showers. If you're biologically that person, I don't care whether you've had a transgender surgery or whatever, you still don't get that opportunity because there is a difference. And some people, at the end of the day, they believe this nonsense, and we've got to get past all of this.
Coach, 1 week from today to wrap all this up is a critically important day for the United States of America and the world. That is the day my Buckeyes will play Notre Dame in the national championship game. But I can't help but lament college sports a little bit. I try not to sound like Grandpa Jesse since I'm only 43, but players, $6 million a year, switching schools every year. Coach, I mean, this is not an improvement, and it's not good.
No. What happened to education back when I was coaching just, 8 years ago? You had to have a certain amount of your courses going towards your degree, or you lose your eligibility. Well, now eligibility is not even talked about. Nothing's talked about other than players making money. Now, Jesse, I'll tell you this. I've always been for players making money, but I saw where a kid the other day went from one school to another for $8 million for 1 year. Now, eventually that's going to affect everything, and there's going to be donor fatigue too of this money coming from certain places. But your Buckeyes are good. They're very good. They keep playing the way they're playing. They will win. Notre Dame's got a good football team also. Very impressed with them and how they play. And it should be a good game. And unfortunately, it's the same day as the inauguration. I guess I'm gonna have to watch a replay of it. But I'm looking forward to it. College football is the second most watched item on television after the NFL. And we're trying our best to find a way to screw it up. And we've got to find a way to get back to some kind of common sense and make it amateur sports again, not to take money away, but making education first and teaching these kids, make them sign a contract where they've got to stay. And if they leave, they got to pay the penalty. But right now, there's no penalty on the players. They can do whatever and transfer once, twice a year, make any difference. And there's no sense of reality. And again, it's kind of run like the federal government.
Yeah, that sounds awfully familiar. Coach, appreciate you as always. Go back soon. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood, and for our lighten the mood segment tonight, it's something a little different for us. We want to shine the light on somebody who you're probably familiar with. Chef Andrew Gruhl comes here, and he does the show American Gravy right here on the First, where he teaches you and me not how to do fancy Michelin chef stuff. How do we make amazing meals right here at home? I love Andrew. He's always welcome on my show. He's also a Southern California man, and he's been organizing real, genuine help for these people. Here he was.
So we put out a call to action that we just needed some small donations. We were going to take them up to the Dream Center up in LA or to the Pasadena Convention Center, as well as hot foods that we were coordinating and giving over to the World Central Kitchen. We've had well over $50,000 in donations from all across the country. I'm talking $5, $10 donations. And we were trying to get it all distributed. We rented a U-Haul van. Customers started showing up with pickup trucks. We still didn't have enough space. We had pallets of products. The city of Huntington Beach offered up their public utility vehicles. They started bringing it up to the Dream Center. Right now, we've got at least 10 to 15 truckloads full in front of the restaurant. And we've had at least 100 volunteers from around Orange County and Los Angeles. In addition to the fact that a couple people had come down who had been evacuated, they parked in our parking lot. We gave them free meals. And then they started helping out and driving stuff back up to LA. So that is a positive story in the midst of all of this.
It really is.
It's wonderful. Americans really are wonderful to each other most of the time. It's nice to see. Our buddy Mike Cernovich has also started a Give, Send, Go. It's raised over $238,000 right now. Meals, baby formula, shoes, you know, things you don't think of. If you'd like to contribute to that, and I would encourage you to do so, givesendgo.com/California Fires is where that money should go. All right? All right. We'll do it again tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.